Chapter 12. With his sweatshirt hood pulled tight against his forehead, Jeff descended a muddy bank toward the curb of Burrow Street, wishing he hadn't forgotten his ball cap in the back seat of his car. The lower plaza lay in plain sight before him, but a Salisbury police cruiser led a line of vehicles toward him from a green light at the plaza intersection, so he ducked behind a large white sign posted near the roadside and lingered there until the line of cars passed. Finally, he stepped out into open view, cloaked by poor visibility from the rainstorm, and glanced back at the large sign that had provided him cover. In large red and blue lettering, it read, "Matt Wellis for County Sheriff." Slightly amused by the irony, he continued along the shoulder of the road to his right, shielding his eyes from the tire wash of passing cars. Once the traffic cleared in both directions, he darted across the street to the opposite curb, veering onto the grassy slope toward the plaza parking lot before another line of cars approached. The rain had failed to discourage the Friday commerce to any significant degree, so driving his conspicuous Camaro to the bank could have been a glaring mistake. Mick was right to have made him walk, but it irked him nonetheless. He quickly descended the modest slope toward the supermarket into the parking lot, with an eye on the satellite branch of the Madison Savings Bank situated at the far end of the strip. An overwhelmed storm drain gurgled in the middle of the lot, feeding into a large and growing puddle, but Jeff kept to the left of it, intercepting a blowing shopping cart and pushing it toward the supermarket entrance like any shopper might. He spotted a young grocery clerk in a yellow raincoat rustling carts in the wind and launched the cart in the worker's general direction as he continued down the parking lot toward the stores. When he reached the covered sidewalk, he stepped up to the liquor store window and checked his reflection in the glass, straightening his hood and brushing the wet strands of hair from his eyes. Deeming himself bankworthy, he slipped inconspicuously past the tall glass windows of the supermarket on his way to the bank entrance. As he reached for the handle, however, the door swung abruptly toward him, and a balding man in a dark gray overcoat strode out of the ATM foyer, inadvertently bumping into Jeff as he struggled to open an umbrella. "Watch it," Jeff grumbled without looking up. The man whirled about.
"Jeff Hollister."
Jeff froze in his tracks. He turned around to see Vice Principal Stammer frowning down upon him. "Hello, Lloyd," he said drearily. Mr. Stammer checked his watch.
"Surprising to see you out and about on such a lovely school day."
"Oh yeah, school. I thought it was Saturday." Jeff scratched his chin. "Shouldn't you be there too?" Mr. Stammer grunted in disapproval and continued down the sidewalk while Jeff slipped inside the foyer, wishing for once he could have kept his big mouth shut. He glanced back at the vice principal, who shot him a contemptuous eye in return before ducking into the supermarket through the automated entrance door. Jeff passed through the foyer and pulled open another glass door to enter the spacious red-carpeted lobby of the bank, where he took a withdrawal slip from a nearby kiosk before heading for the teller counter at the far end of the room. A young brunette in glasses summoned him forward and pointed to his hood.
"Please remove that."
"Sorry." Jeff pulled off the hood again and lowered his head, wary that someone might recognize him.
"Thank you. How can I help you?"
Jeff scribbled a figure and his signature upon the withdrawal slip and passed it over the counter along with the bank book. "Large bills, please." She read the slip and checked the bank book.
"I'll need some identification."
Jeff pulled his wallet from his vest pocket and flipped it open on the counter for her to see. He held his breath as she took the wallet and scanned the license closely, exhaling slowly once she handed it back to him. "No 50s, just hundreds," he told her, slipping it into the back pocket of his jeans. The teller nodded and pulled a stack of crisp, new $100 bills from her cash drawer, meticulously counting out 17 of them on her countertop, while a printer simultaneously recorded the transaction in the bank book. Jeff glanced warily at the cameras surrounding him, although no one in the bank seemed alarmed by his presence. She placed the money into an envelope and passed it back across the countertop along with the bank book.
"Have a nice day."
"Thanks." Jeff scooped up the items and turned to leave. On his way out of the lobby, he stopped at a wastebasket beside the kiosk and prepared to toss the bank book into it. but a memory struck him from many years ago, of the day he and his father had opened the account with his first allowance money. Only a few dollars remained in the account now, and the bank book was little more than a memento, but standing over the wastebasket, he found himself incapable of letting it go. Instead, he slid it into his vest pocket and continued toward the exit. As he passed into the ATM foyer again, his sentimental daydream was jolted away by the wail of a siren and a flash of blue light at the farthest visible point of Borough Street, descending along the hillside ridge towards the plazas. Panic gripped him as a second cruiser followed the first in line, circling the ridge with an additional blur of flashing blue. The first cruiser slowed for the left turn into the lower plaza, allowing the second cruiser to close swiftly upon its rear bumper. And then both cruisers sped down the entrance driveway into the parking lot, where they promptly split apart. The lead car headed straight for the bank, as the second car followed the edge of the grassy island parallel to Borough Street, racing in the opposite direction from which it had just come. With sirens in the air and his heartbeat in his ears, Jeff folded the envelope of money in half and shoved it down into his underwear. He exited the foyer and hastened down the sidewalk, noting Mr. Stammer standing behind a supermarket window with a cell phone to his ear. The vice principal followed him to the automated exit door and emerged from the supermarket, waving to the approaching cruisers as Jeff frantically scanned the lot for an escape route. Jeff veered past Stammer's lunging grasp and sprinted down the sidewalk past the liquor store. While the first cruiser fishtailed to a stop outside the glass ATM foyer and accelerated down the fire lane behind him, the second cruiser cut a wide arc past the gurgling storm drain and sped towards the stores with the clear objective of cutting off the sidewalk beyond the pharmacy. The converging vehicles forced Jeff to depart the sidewalk for the open parking lot into the steady rain. At the edge of the large puddle, the grocery clerk froze amid the commotion, leaving a chain of 20 grocery carts blocking Jeff's only escape route. Jeff lengthened his strides and sprang high in the air in an attempt to jump over the train of carts, but the toe of his trailing sneaker caught a protruding handle and he tumbled headlong to the asphalt, bracing his fall with his stitched palm. He scrambled to his feet with a wince and pressed forward, while both cruisers swerved to chase after him. The clerk stood petrified against the carts as the cruisers raced by on either side to close in on Jeff's position. The first car splashed through the puddle and spun to a halt on the high side of the parking lot as the second car brushed past Jeff before skidding to a stop directly in front of him. Sergeant Hurst leaped from the white cruiser with his pistol drawn, while Officer Boyd popped open the door of his patrol car, crouching behind it with his gun leveled at Jeff's chest.
"Don't move,"
he barked.
"Put your hands up. Do it."
Jeff slowly complied with the order, scowling at the terrified clerk who had just muddled his escape. He stood motionless except for his darting eyes, wary that he might be shot on the spot if he failed to follow every instruction flawlessly. Sergeant Hurst approached him first, his gun aimed with deadly precision.
"Hands in the air. Kneel on the ground."
Jeff complied with the orders, dropping to his knees before lying flat on his stomach with his scraped palms stretched out on the cool, wet pavement. He lifted his head to see a third cruiser rounding the high ridge of Borough Street toward the plaza intersection as Boyd approached cautiously with his gun still drawn.
"Stay down."
Hurst holstered his weapon and knelt down to pat Jeff's legs and back pockets, confiscating his soggy wallet and the $13 enclosed.
"Well, what do you know? It's Jeff Hollister, the catch of the day."
He bent over close to Jeff's ear and whispered,
"Chief Wellis wants to talk to you real bad."
Hurst pinned a knee against Jeff's back and pulled each arm down one at a time to snap a set of handcuffs tightly around his wrists. Boyd bent forward, and together they lifted Jeff by his arms, setting him upon his feet before Hurst pasted him against the side of the cruiser.
"Take it easy. I'm not resisting."
"Where's Cindy Wellis?"
Hurst asked. Boyd stepped within an inch of Jeff's face and began to fish his fingers through the pockets of Jeff's jeans.
Where's my gun?
I don't have any gun, and I don't know where she is. I want to see a lawyer. Hurst pulled out his club and pointed it at Jeff's chin.
You're going to want to see a doctor if anything's happened to the chief's daughter.
Jeff tried to answer, but instead, he doubled over in pain as Hurst drove the butt of the club into his gut. Boyd stopped searching his pockets to catch him from collapsing to the ground.
Easy, Bob. He's just a kid.
He's a no-good rotten punk,
Hurst snapped.
Read him his rights.
Gasping for breath, Jeff could hardly hear as Officer Boyd recited the Miranda rights from memory. Instead, he focused on the balding vice principal emerging from a growing crowd of spectators with his black umbrella held over his head. At the same time, the third police cruiser slowed at the intersection, its siren muted as it descended the plaza driveway. Jeff's stomach felt squeamish, not only from the blow of Hurst's baton, but also from the crushing revelation that the gig was up. California was but a dream now. Boyd snapped his fingers in front of Jeff's face.
Do you understand the rights that I have just read to you?
Huh? Yeah, whatever, Jeff replied, his gaze still fixated on the vice principal coming their way.
Officers?
Mr. Stammer called out as he approached along the edge of the puddle. Boyd whirled about.
Whoa, sir, please stay back.
Mr. Stammer halted a few feet away.
I just wanted to thank you for your exemplary effort in removing this, element from our streets. I intend to write a letter of commendation to both the mayor and the police chief to let them know what a fine job the both of you have done today.
Hurst puffed out his chest.
Much appreciated, Mr. Stammer.
Jeff rolled his eyes. Will you hit me again if I puke on you? The sergeant yanked open the rear door of his cruiser.
Shut your mouth, Hollister.
Mr. Stammer narrowed his sight upon their captive.
I warned you that this day would come, Jeff. A life of delinquency can only lead to heartbreak and misery. I only hope that you'll learn from this experience and make better choices when given the opportunity in the future.
Jeff longed to kick the vice principal in the knee, but he knew Hurst would never allow it. Stammer gave each of the officers a congratulatory handshake before starting back toward the supermarket, while the third cruiser sped toward the giant puddle as it pulled around the right side of Boyd's car. Mr. Stammer? Jeff called out as Hurst took his arm. The vice principal sighed and turned around, clearly annoyed by the beckoning.
Now what, Jeff?
Thanks for the advice, Jeff said with a wink and a grin. The brief delay did the trick. The right front tire of the approaching cruiser caught the edge of the puddle, sending a sheet of rainwater down the slope of the parking lot. The vice principal cried out helplessly as the wave of grimy water struck him and knocked the umbrella from his hand. With his suit completely drenched, Stammer scooped up the umbrella and gestured angrily at the driver of the third cruiser before rushing off in a huff. Jeff chuckled as he sat down in the back seat of the cruiser, while Hurst slammed the rear door shut behind him. He opened the front door and slid behind the steering wheel.
Hope you had a good laugh, Hollister. Probably the last one you'll have for a long time.
Officer Boyd stepped to the open door.
Need me to follow you down, Bob?
Nah, I got this.
Hurst shut his door and shifted into drive before pulling the radio microphone from the center console.
Squad car 2. Suspect in custody. Transporting back to station.
Roger, car 2.
A female voice crackled in response. Hurst waited for the other two cruisers to proceed while Jeff squirmed in his seat, trying to wriggle his wrists in the handcuffs locked painfully tight behind his back. The three cruisers drove up the plaza ramp in succession, turning right onto Borough Street through the halted flow of traffic, parading their capture before the citizens of Salisbury with full lights and sirens along the main thoroughfare. As they accelerated up the road, Jeff spotted the familiar grill of a blue Camaro parked at the edge of the upper plaza lot, facing out toward the street. All three policemen drove their cruisers past the Camaro in oblivion while he held his breath, trying to glimpse the occupants of the car without turning his head too much. The lead cruiser snuffed its siren and lights
before turning left onto Willow Street, but Hearst continued to follow Boyd's car down Burrow Street toward the public safety complex near the center of town. The sergeant glanced into his rearview mirror at Jeff, sitting in the middle of the caged back seat.
Nice ride, eh, Hollister?
Jeff glared at the sergeant's eyes in the mirror. What? Hearst patted the dashboard.
Brand new police Explorer Interceptor with a V8 hybrid engine. I had her up to a 120 yesterday, and she wasn't even breathing hard. Dual airbags, anti-lock brakes, traction control, GPS. She's even got that new car smell.
So what? You want me to buy it or something? You sound like a used car salesman.
Did you know you're the first criminal to ride in the back of this fine vehicle?
I'm honored, Jeff muttered.
Don't be bitter, Hollister. You knew this day would come sooner or later. You and your friends used to get away with murder in this town. It's different now the chief is here. Take this car. We'd never get cars like this. We'd get the used ones from Madison. Now it's a whole new ball game. Matt Willis has given us the tools we need to put punks like you behind bars. He's the best thing that ever happened to this town. He's got a plan for law and order in this community, and it's gonna take him places.
Yeah, he's a real visionary.
He is, Hollister, and he knows what a snake in the grass you are. He knows you've been trying to get at him through his daughter, but he didn't figure you were so evil that you'd murder her when your scheme didn't work.
I didn't murder anyone. You're out of your mind. Stop talking to me. I just want to see my lawyer.
All in good time, Hollister. All in good time.
An ominous feeling gripped Jeff's gut as he realized he was at the mercy of a police force that likely held little concern for his welfare. Beyond the beating wipers of the rainy windshield, the brake lights on Officer Boyd's cruiser flashed bright red in their faces, its yellow blinker indicating a left turn toward Salisbury High School. Hearst slowed the squad car and passed Boyd's cruiser on the shoulder of the road before accelerating into the clear lane ahead. Jeff glimpsed back, hoping to see the Camaro outside the rear window, but by now, other vehicles had merged into the line of traffic, obstructing it from his view. As they neared the driveway to the Salisbury Public Safety Complex, Jeff spotted through the front windshield a white van approaching them, its roof equipped with a small satellite dish and its hood stamped with the red letters reading WCRT News. He quickly recalled the Amber Alert and slid across the seat to his left, pressing his face close to the side window as the news van whizzed by. Brake lights flashed bright red upon the wet pavement as the van skidded to a halt in the middle of Burrow Street, momentarily cutting off traffic in both directions as it turned about in a wide arc to pursue the police car. Jeff settled smugly into his seat again, eyeing Hearst's face in the rearview mirror as the sergeant cursed beneath his breath. The sergeant turned the cruiser onto the winding driveway leading to the brick building on the hilltop, while Jeff slid back to the center of the seat from the force of the turn. The news van followed in swift pursuit, while the rest of the traffic continued straight along Burrow Street past the driveway entrance. As the cruiser raced up the driveway, Jeff spotted the Camaro at the tail end of the traffic line, discreetly following the course of the other cars in line, but his view was quickly cut off as the cruiser crested the hill. Over the hilltop, the driveway pitched downward into a rectangular lot smattered with cars, with four idled cruisers parked in the far spaces abutting an open grass lawn. The sergeant kept his cruiser along the curb to the right of the lot, continuing onto the asphalt sidewalk leading to the entrance doors of the police station. 20 feet down the sidewalk, he jammed the shifter into park and popped his door open with the motor still idling and the lights still flashing. He stepped out into the rain, cursing again at the sight of the news van rounding the hilltop. A moment later, Jeff's door flew open.
Get out,
Hearst growled. Jeff slid over and slowly swung his feet out of the vehicle, cautiously placing them on the wet pavement as he eyed the sky for falling rain. Hearst grabbed him by his vest and yanked him free of the cruiser with a powerful jerk before shoving him forward into the arms of a policeman approaching along the sidewalk. "Hey, watch it, you big goon!" Jeff shouted. "I got rights, you know!" Hurst whipped out his club and pointed it at Jeff's nose.
"You've got as much rights as a bug on my windshield. You'd best start walking with Officer Carmella before I take forcible action against you."
Jeff grudgingly offered an arm to Officer Carmella, annoyed that such a young and diminutive officer would be the one to finally escort him into custody. Still, with the gargoyle Hurst lurking behind him looking for an excuse to bash his skull in, he realized it was better to swallow his pride and comply without further objection. Carmella led him down the same hallway where he had first met Cindy, through the familiar door to the left into the lobby of the police station. Inside, two more policemen awaited his arrival. They each took him by an arm as the thick metal latch of a heavy wooden door buzzed open. They passed through the doorway into the dispatch room, where Detective Shelnick stood behind a female dispatcher with a coffee mug in hand. He directed them toward the booking room to their right, but a booming voice from the back of the room halted everyone in their tracks.
"Bring him back here,"
Chief Wellis ordered. Detective Shelnick shook his head.
"No, Matt. No questions until we book him."
Chief Wellis craned his neck to see Sergeant Hurst pulling the security door shut behind the entourage.
Bob, would you bring Mr. Hollister back this way, please?"
"Yes, sir."
Hurst stepped forward and gripped Jeff by the elbow, jerking him away from Officer Carmella. The sergeant steered him away from Detective Shelnick and toward the entrance of the rear corridor where the police chief stood.
"That's not standard procedure, Matt,"
Shelnick yelled.
"He hasn't been booked yet."
Chief Wellis stepped up to the detective.
"We're talking about my daughter,"
he whispered hoarsely. Shelnick grabbed his arm.
"You've worked so hard to get him. Don't blow it now."
As they debated, Sergeant Hurst escorted his suspect down the corridor, his grip on Jeff's elbow tightening as they walked. They passed two closed doors to the left before slowing for a short corridor to the right that led to three holding cells, each empty with its steel door ajar. Hurst started Jeff toward the holding cells, but Chief Wellis caught up and tapped him on the shoulder from behind, pointing to a black camera bubble mounted on the ceiling.
"Follow me,"
he murmured as he continued down the corridor. Jeff glanced back to Detective Shelnick, standing at the end of the hallway with his hands on his hips. He tried to call out to the detective, but Hurst pulled him away from the holding cell corridor and pushed him farther down the hallway. At the end of the long corridor, Chief Wellis unlocked a door on the left with a badge reader, holding it open enough for Hurst to shove Jeff inside. The chief shouted an indistinguishable order at Detective Shelnick before retreating into the room and squeezing the door shut with a metallic click. The hair on Jeff's neck bristled as he scanned his surroundings, for he knew he was in no holding cell or monitored interrogation room. Venetian blinds covered the tall windows before him, fully lowered and tightly drawn shut, allowing only minimal shards of grim daylight through its slits. The soft beige carpet, the pine wood desk, and the collection of diplomas, plaques, and photographs displayed about the walls all led him to the swift and unnerving conclusion that this was the chief's private office, and no one, not even the good detective, would muster the courage to challenge their powerful boss on behalf of a hated juvenile delinquent. Jeff tried to remain cool despite his heartbeat pounding in his ears. He nodded toward the desk phone and asked, "Is this where I get to call my lawyer?" The two lawmen exchanged subtle smirks, and then Hurst grabbed Jeff by the collar, hurling the handcuffed boy across the room with all the strength in his beefy arms. Jeff flew over a wooden client chair before crashing on top of the desk, sending the telephone, computer, monitor, and numerous picture frames scattering across the floor. He slid across the polished desktop to land prone on the armrests of a leather swivel chair that promptly toppled over, spilling him onto the floor. Painfully, he rolled to his knees, but Chief Wellis was already upon him, lifting him by his vest again and pinning him up against the back wall. Jeff's face reddened as the man gripped his collar.
You cops are all alike.
I'm not a cop. I'm a father.
The chief roared.
Where's my daughter, you son of a bitch?
Before Jeff could answer, he was airborne again, this time careening into the Venetian blinds and the hard glass windows they obscured. He backpedaled frantically to maintain his footing before toppling to the floor and landing upon his cuffed hands. Cowering against the wall beneath the windows, he raised his feet in defense of the advancing men, terrified by the chief's rage and the sergeant's sadism, and keenly aware that any rights or standard procedures that might protect him were locked away somewhere outside the thick wooden door. The blue Camaro turned left from Burrow Street onto Sandal Drive, a back road climbing a long, steady ridge rising behind the public safety complex. At the top of the hill, Axel turned the car about across the clear opposite lane and pulled onto the shoulder of a curve overlooking the rear of the police station. He shifted into neutral, letting the engine idle as he turned to his two friends.
So what do we do now?
Bumbles leaned forward from the back seat.
We gotta say something. We gotta tell the cops.
Crazy Legs maintained an unwavering stare upon the brick building below.
That won't do us any good.
Well, we better do something pretty quick,
Bumbles said.
Curly said
not to tell the cops,
Axel snapped. He cast a nervous glance in the rearview mirror.
Look, maybe we should just go back. Mick's gonna throw a fit when he finds out we took the car. If we tell Curly that Jeff's in jail, maybe it'll change things.
Crazy Legs waved him off.
We can't trust Curly for anything. As far as Mick goes, he's satisfied just holding up in his living room. Jeff would be out here looking for opportunities.
What opportunities? He's busted. It's game over, dude.
Axel shifted the car into gear again.
We're gonna get busted too if we sit here much longer. Come on, let's go.
No!
Bumbles batted his palm against Axel's headrest.
Let me out!
Well, what are you gonna do?
I don't know. Something? Anything?
Bumbles sighed.
Look, Jeff saved my life. I gotta help him somehow. At least I gotta try.
Crazy Legs scratched his chin.
What you thinking? Fire alarm? Bomb scare?
Axel shook his head.
They'll never believe it. They'll suspect it was us. And even if we get them out of the building, we'll never get near him.
Bumbles frowned.
Thanks, Buzzkill.
Just keeping it real.
Suddenly, Crazy Legs pointed to the building.
Did you guys just see that?
Bumbles craned his neck forward.
See what?
Those window blinds.
The scout's voice trailed off. He studied the building a moment longer before popping his door open.
Come on, follow me.
Axel killed the motor.
What is it?
Crazy Legs stepped out of the car and tilted the seat forward for Bumbles to exit.
Maybe an opportunity. Hurry!
The skinny boy barely waited for his friends to join him in front of the car before running down the slick grassy hill toward the windowless rear wall of the brick building. At the far end of the wet lawn, 200 feet long, bright blue lights continued to flash atop Squad Car 2 as the two TV reporters huddled beneath an umbrella beside the news van, one holding a microphone and the other a video camera. Crazy Legs reached the cover of the brick wall first, crouching behind the corner to peer down the long side of the building toward the front walk, while the other two hurricanes slid up beside him a few seconds later.
Now what?
Axel panted.
Wait here.
Crazy Legs crept forward to the edge of the closest window. As he did, the blinds shook violently as if struck from the other side. He retracted at first, but then he peered through a gap in the newly damaged slats before returning to the cover of the rear wall.
Jeff's in there with Hurst and Chief Wells,
he whispered.
They're roughing him up pretty good.
Bumbles started forward.
Let's bust him out!
Wait!
Crazy Legs grabbed him by the arm before pointing to the four idle cruisers at the edge of the parking lot.
They got guns and they got cars. How far do you think we'll get?
Axel frowned.
We need a diversion.
Bumbles stepped to the corner of the building.
What's the one thing a politician hates?
His friends shrugged, and he smiled at them with a mischievous twinkle in his eye.
bad press.
Crazy Legs nodded.
I like it. But what about all those cop cars?
Axel pulled a Swiss Army knife from his pocket and opened the blade.
I'm on it.
Hold on,
Crazy Legs said.
What if we all don't make it back?
I left the keys in the ignition.
Axel patted Bumbles on the shoulder.
Ready?
Bumbles drew a deep breath.
Let's go.
The two boys trotted off through the rain in separate directions, while Crazy Legs crouched low beside the corner of the building, waiting for their opportunity to fully develop. Inside the corner office, Sergeant Hurst pressed Jeff up against the blinds with a forearm beneath his chin.
Tough gang leader. Not so tough now.
Chief Wellis folded his arms across his chest and leaned against his desk.
What part about staying away from my daughter didn't you understand?
Jeff strained to speak. I'll tell you what I know, but you gotta do something for me first.
Hurst grunted.
Huh. Mention your lawyer again and I'll pop your head like a zit.
Jeff turned to reveal the handcuffs behind his back.
Take these off.
Good one, Hollister. I don't think so.
Come on, they're killing me.
Jeff glanced at the chief. Where am I going to go? The chief studied Jeff's eyes for a moment.
Take them off.
Hurst bristled.
Chief!
My daughter's life's on the line. Take them off or give me your keys. That's an order.
Hurst spun Jeff around to face the blinds, leaning his captive over the wide sill as he fumbled to insert a key into the cuffs. The sergeant bent his wrists sharply for better access to the keyhole, while the chief leaned closer to ascertain the reason for the delay. Wincing, Jeff gazed through the tattered blinds, where he detected a shadow beyond the glass, perhaps even an eyeball peering back at him through a gap in the blinds.
Geez, Bob, why so tight?
The chief asked.
Public enemy number one, remember?
Hurst snapped the cuffs open and fastened them to his belt.
Let him file a complaint. I'm just doing my job.
Jeff rubbed the welts on his wrists as he turned back around. What's that, town thug? Hurst grabbed the handle of his baton.
Why, you little...
Back off, Sergeant. This is about Cindy. Let's hear it, Jeff.
Jeff swallowed hard. The hurricanes and tornadoes had always shared an implicit understanding that ratting to the police was a contemptible act, but the scope of his quandary overrode such juvenile pacts now.
I was with her last night. We were on the boat. We were minding our own business when two guys in a canoe attacked us. They firebombed us. That's how it burned. We jumped overboard and swam ashore.
A glint of hope kindled in the chief's eyes.
She swam ashore with you?
Yes. I swear I would never hurt her. We were on the shore safe and sound.
Hurst glared at him skeptically.
So why'd you leave her there?
I didn't. She left me. She told me to get out of her life and then she was gone.
But if you were just minding your own business, why...
The chief held up his hand to stifle Hurst's questioning. He returned to his desk and leaned back against it again, stroking his mustache with his thick fingers.
If what you say is true, where do you think she is now?
Jeff shrugged.
I don't know. She was pretty upset. She mentioned Shannon.
Hurst grimaced.
Come on, Matt. You're not falling for this bull, are you? He's hiding something. It's Jeff Hollister, for Christ's sake.
Chief Wellis picked up his telephone from the floor and set it back on the desk. He lifted the receiver and quickly punched in a phone number on the keypad.
I don't know, Bob. Some of it makes sense. The fire marshal thinks an accelerant started the fire, but the gas tank was still intact.
He paused a moment before holding the receiver up in the air.
No answer at Shannon's house.
What about the guys in a canoe?
Hurst asked.
Can you identify them?
I sure can. I can also tell you who shot Lionel Armstrong and who ambushed the two cops in my yard. And you know what? It wasn't me. Hurst's face reddened.
Yeah? What about the Nelson kid? Know anything about him? Don't get all righteous on us, Hollister. We've got the goods on you. You're going to prison.
A sharp knock at the door startled him.
We're busy,
he barked. Chief Wellis stepped to the door and opened it to reveal Officer Carmella standing in the hallway.
What is it, Jason?
TV reporters are back, Chief.
Tell them to get lost. I already told them no comment.
I know, but they're interviewing some kid in a hurricane jacket on the front sidewalk. He says he saw Sergeant Hurst roughing up Jeff Hollister in the Plaza parking lot and that he's got a video to prove it.
Jeff held his breath. The trailing blue Camaro, the shadow at the window, the commotion on the walk. What was transpiring outside the room? Chief Wellis glowered at Hurst.
4 days until the election. And you're squeezing a local kid in a public parking lot. What's the matter with you?
The burly sergeant rushed to the door with eyes bulging and nostrils flaring. He brushed Carmella aside and stormed down the hallway.
Where is he? I'll fix the little twerp.
Better hurry, Sarge,
Carmella yelled.
I think they're streaming live.
Chief Wellis stepped to the doorway to watch Hurst storm down the hallway.
Call the Portland rescue team,
he told Carmella.
Tell them they can stand down for now.
Carmella raised an eyebrow.
Good news about your daughter?
Maybe. Keep an eye on Bob. He's pretty wound up.
The chief shut the door and ambled across the room, stooping to retrieve a family photograph from the carpet before setting it on the desktop again.
I know this probably feels like the end of the line, Jeff,
he said, picking up his stapler from the floor.
But it doesn't have to be that way.
Jeff slunk toward the windowsill and peered over his shoulder to glimpse the lawn through the tattered blinds. End of the line, sir? The chief continued to pick up the other items scattered across the floor.
If what you say is true, if Cindy is okay, there might be a chance for you to catch a break.
Jeff turned to face the chief again. How so?
Turn witness against the gangs and help us find the missing guns.
Jeff leaned back against the sill. That's one way to go, I guess. Just then, there was a loud rap against the glass, and he heard his name shouted from outside the window.
Jeff!
What the hell was that?
The chief rushed to the window before pointing at the wall behind the desk.
Stand over there.
The chief spread the blinds with his fingers to peer outside, while Jeff backed to the desk. He lifted the telephone from the desktop and stepped up behind the chief, promptly swatting him over the back of the head with a clang. The chief groaned and slumped to the floor as Jeff dropped the phone beside him. He reached up and ripped the center blinds down to reveal Crazy Legs outside the window, frantically waving his arms. The skinny boy glanced urgently toward the front walk before facing Jeff again.
Hurry,
he called. Jeff spun about and grabbed the wooden chair set at the front of the desk, raising it high over his head before launching it at the center window with all his might. The chair sailed through the pane with a terrific crash, showering both the chief and the lawn with broken glass. The deafening sound and the sight of the chair tumbling across the lawn caught everyone's attention on the distant walkway, and several jaws dropped at the sight of Jeff Hollister jumping from the windowsill onto the muddy lawn. The cameraman pivoted toward the commotion, but Sergeant Hurst shoved the reporter Flynn aside and drew his service gun. He strode aggressively across the walkway in front of his blinking cruiser and stopped at the edge of the lawn with his feet spread apart and his pistol clenched firmly in both hands.
Freeze, Hollister,
he ordered.
You are in my sights.
Jeff stopped, for he knew Hurst had a clean shot. He raised his hands slowly and warily glanced back toward the front entrance, only to see Bumbles brushing past Flynn and sprinting across the walkway. An errant shot rang out as Bumbles tackled Hurst to the ground. They wrestled upon the wet grass while Carmella rushed to assist his superior, and the cameraman turned his focus upon the fray.
Run, Jeff!
Bumbles yelled as Hurst pinned him to the grass. Crazy Legs ran up and yanked at Jeff's arm.
This way!
Jeff dashed after his friend across the slippery lawn as Axel ran on a convergent course to his left. They met at the base of the steep embankment and quickly scaled it to the shoulder of the road where the Camaro was parked. Crazy Legs arrived at the car first. He opened the passenger door and pulled the seat forward while Axel rounded the front of the car and climbed into the driver's seat. Jeff lumbered to the top of the hill and dove into the back seat of the car as the engine roared to life. Crazy Legs clambered into the front passenger seat and slammed the door behind him.
Go!
Axel cut the steering wheel to the left and punched the gas, spinning the nose of the Camaro completely about on the wet pavement before straightening the wheel and accelerating up Sandal Street.
We're just gonna leave Bumbles behind?
We have to,
Crazy Legs said.
He'll be okay.
Jeff looked out the back window before leaning forward between the seats. What the hell were you guys thinking? You're in deep shit now.
We had no choice,
Crazy Legs told him.
We gotta get you back to Mix.
No way. No time for that. Jeff reached down his pants and pulled out the folded money envelope. He slid the bills out and peeled off 7 of them before tossing the remainder in his friend's lap. Here's the money. I gotta get out of town fast. Pull over somewhere and I'll drop you off. Crazy Legs folded the bills in his hand.
You don't understand. It's not about the money.
Axel glanced into the mirror.
Curly called Mick's house 10 minutes after you left. He wants to talk to you.
Yeah, right, Jeff said. I'd rather sing Jingle Bells on the chief's front step than talk to that son of a bitch right now. Crazy Legs looked him straight in his eyes.
He says he has Cindy. He says he's gonna kill her if you don't talk to him by 10 o'clock.
The scout's words hung heavy in the air, for the worry that had been nagging Jeff for the past hour was now directly in his face. Still, he continued to deny the notion. He's bluffing. He probably saw the news. He's just messing with my head.
Are you gonna take that chance?
Crazy Legs asked.
Without even talking to him?
Jeff shook his head. We'll never make it. This car sticks out like a sore thumb. The cops will be all over us in 2 minutes. Axel pulled out his phone.
I can call in an accident across town. It might tie him up.
Jeff frowned. Too late. What about the cars back there?
I cut the valve stems on their tires. It'll give you a head start anyway.
Good work. Don't know if it's enough.
It all comes down to one thing,
Crazy Legs said.
Whether you give a damn or not.
Jeff sighed with exasperation, for he knew his friend was right. He pointed at the stereo clock on the dashboard. You better step on it, Axel. We only got 5 minutes to get there. Axel tossed his phone into the skinny boy's lap.
Call Denny and make sure he's ready for us.
He hit the gas and they all slid back in their seats while the Camaro raced even faster up and down the slick hills of Sandal Street, back toward hurricane territory. Moments later, the Camaro careened onto Poplar Street and splashed through the gutter to race up the Landry's driveway. The garage door rolled up swiftly before it, and Denny pulled the door down just as quickly after the car slid to a stop inside the bay. The three boys climbed out of the car, and Axel handed Jeff the keys.
Sweet ride. Glad I got to drive it one more time.
Denny brushed past him for the entry door to the house.
Mick wants your asses upstairs now. He's plenty pissed.
He bounded up the staircase to his right while Axel rolled his eyes and dutifully followed. Crazy Legs squeezed between the front bumper and the garage wall before entering the house after them. Jeff dallied behind, closing the door and climbing a short flight of carpeted stairs to the front landing of the split-level home. Mick's voice boomed from the upstairs living room.
So you just stole the keys out of my pocket when I'm in the shower?
Axel stood erect at the top of the stairs.
I didn't steal anything. They weren't yours in the first place.
Don't get smart, Alex. I'll lay you out right here.
Mick turned to the skinny boy arriving at the top of the stairs.
So where's Bumbles?
Crazy Legs stepped up to Axel's side.
The cops got him.
Jeff climbed the second flight of stairs and stepped to the edge of the living room behind Crazy Legs. He locked eyes with Mick, standing bare-chested beside the burgundy picture window curtains, with the hurricane leader's face turning brighter shades of red.
How the hell did that happen?
Jeff got busted by the cops,
Crazy Legs explained.
We broke him out, but Bumbles got caught. He knew what he was doing.
Mick stared Jeff up and down.
So I'm losing my men to spring this deserter out of jail?
Jeff winced. I'm not here to make nice, Mick. I'm here about a phone call. Feel free to rant all you want once I'm gone. Mick leveled a finger at him.
Cut the attitude, Jeff. You come over here uninvited asking for money. You get one of my guys arrested. And now you're on the verge of blowing our cover and dragging the rest of us down with you. The cops has been down this street 3 times already. And I got your big blue car sitting in my garage. I'm the leader of the Hurricanes now. So you gotta listen to what I have to say. Got it?
Jeff folded his arms across his chest. Fine. So what's up with Curly? Mick's agitation mellowed to plain disgust.
He called right after you left. He didn't say what he wanted. He said he'll call one more time and that you better be here when he did. You know where the phone is.
Jeff furrowed his brow and backed into the kitchen where a cordless phone hung on the wall. Crazy Legs leaned back against the staircase post in frustration, clearly abashed by the volatile dynamic between his friends. Mick turned to peer through the split in the center of the drawn curtains, snapping his fingers a moment later and motioning his friends forward. Denny sprang from the recliner to join Axel by their leader's side.
Check it out,
Mick said.
Spy.
Axel squinted through the foggy window at the windswept church grounds across the street.
How can you tell?
Denny pointed and laughed.
Look, his sneakers are sticking out at the bottom of that bush. What a moron.
The shrill ring of the kitchen phone pierced their conversation. Jeff snatched the receiver off the hook before the second ring. Yeah? Curly's voice screeched in his ear.
Hollister!
Jeff wandered back to the top of the stairs as the Hurricanes looked on intently. What do you want?
Aw, come on, Hollister. You don't sound too happy to hear from me. What about all the good times we've had? Like that tender moment out of the lake last night. Big bad Jeff Hollister and little Miss Law and Order cuddled up like 2 lovebirds on a boat. Now one of the lovebirds is locked up, all alone and scared. She's a very pretty girl, Hollister. Too bad she made the mistake of going out with you.
She's not going out with me anymore.
So I heard. It's all the same to me, Jeffy. If you don't care, then don't worry about it. Maybe you'll read about her someday. You know, skeletal remains, dental records, stuff like that.
Jeff squeezed the phone. You bastard. I'm gonna...
Don't threaten me, Hollister. You are in no position to threaten me. Now, if you do exactly what I tell you, she might live. You won't, but she might.
Jeff drifted into the living room. Let me talk to her.
Yeah, that ain't happening. She's not even with me right now. Hopefully, JJ's treating her right, but I can't guarantee anything. Let's just assume she's okay.
You're bluffing.
Okay then, see ya.
Wait, Jeff blurted out. He closed his eyes and drew a deep breath. What do you want from me?
Real simple. Your life for hers. You got until noon to meet me. The Portland Mining Company. There's a cabin on the hilltop. Don't be late.
Curly paused.
And no cops. If I see any cops or any Hurricanes, anyone at all besides you, then I'm not going to treat her so nice anymore. Got it?
Yeah, I got it. Portland Mines. I'll be there.
I'm looking forward to it, Hollister.
The line clicked dead, and the color drained from Jeff's face as he returned the phone to its hook on the kitchen wall. He walked back to the top of the stairs and stared numbly across the living room at the Hurricanes. Crazy Legs stepped forward and shook him by the arm.
What did he say?
He struggled to say the words. I gotta meet him by noon, or he's gonna kill her. Axel and Denny gasped, but Mick simply turned back toward the picture window. Crazy Legs slipped past Jeff and snatched the kitchen phone from its mount.
That's it. I'm calling the cops.
No, no cops. He's gonna kill her if he sees a cop. Jeff drew a deep breath. I have to go by myself. That's what he said. Axel grimaced.
Right. He's got a hostage, he's got an accomplice, and he's got a gun. Sounds fair to me.
Jeff absorbed Axel's blunt assessment and hung his head in despair while his three friends mulled his predicament, all at a loss for words. Finally, he looked up at the solitary figure at the window and walked across the living room to him. "I need a favor from you," he said. Mick pointed outside.
"Spy's gone. Curly calls and he splits. Coincidence?"
Jeff strained to comprehend his point. "I don't know. Listen, I need the gun." Mick pulled a fresh pack of cigarettes and took one out before stuffing the pack back into his pocket.
"Don't get too worked up, Jeff. You can't trust Curly one bit."
"I hear you. I'm asking you for a favor. As a friend."
"He probably saw the news, and now he's just messing with your head."
"I can't take that chance. Can I have the gun?" Mick lit his cigarette and took a long drag before exhaling slowly.
"Sorry, Jeff. I don't think that's in anyone's best interest right now,"
he said earnestly. Jeff digested Mick's response for a moment. He straightened up abruptly and bolted for the staircase with his car keys in hand. Axel followed him.
"What do you want us to do, Jeff?"
"Just stay out of my way," Jeff growled. He bounded both flights of stairs and slammed the inner garage door shut as he exited the house. A moment later, everyone could hear the sound of the rolling garage door rumbling through the house, followed by the roar of the Camaro's engine. Crazy Legs turned to Mick.
"What did you say to him? Why'd he run out of here like that?"
Mick shrugged, aloof.
"He wanted a gun. I said no. It's my gun. I'll do what I want with it."
He snapped his fingers and cussed.
"The money! He didn't give me the money! Denny, go stop him! Quick!"
Denny broke for the stairs, but Crazy Legs grabbed him by the arm. The skinny boy pulled the wad of $100 bills from his sweatpants pocket and threw it across the living room.
"There's your stinking money!"
Mick watched in astonishment as the bills fluttered to the carpet.
"Hey!"
he objected. Crazy Legs rushed downstairs to the landing and yanked open the front door, but he stopped to point up through the balusters at his leader.
"He's your best friend. You're just gonna sit here while he heads off to die."
He pushed the storm door open and grabbed the knob of the front door.
"If that's what being a hurricane is all about, then I'm ashamed to call myself one."
The skinny boy stormed outside and slammed the door shut so hard it rattled the glass in the picture window. Mick pulled the curtains back to watch his scout running after the Camaro racing up Birch Street, while Denny and Axel diverted their eyes away and occupied themselves with retrieving the scattered bills from the carpet. The hurricane leader turned away from the window to face his two remaining friends.
"Who's got a car?"
Axel took the money from Denny and laid the entire pile on the coffee table.
"Not sure. Brain said his mother has the flu. Maybe she stayed home from work."
Mick turned to Denny.
"Text him. Get him out of class."
Denny shook his head.
"Can't. He's in calculus right now. His teacher has a no-phone policy."
"Then go to the school and get him. Don't take no for an answer. Text me with an update."
Mick turned to Axel.
"Where's TJ right now?"
"I don't know. Jim, probably."
"You guys are supposed to know this stuff."
Mick took a final drag from the cigarette before snuffing it out in an ashtray.
"Find him and meet me at the fort in half an hour."
"What fort?"
Axel asked. Mick clapped his hands at them.
"Come on, move it!"
Denny and Axel jumped at his prodding and rushed downstairs to the foyer landing. Once beyond their leader's view, they exchanged keen nods and fist bumps before rushing outside into the rain to embark upon their newly assigned duties.